Americans do tip, and they tip exorbitant amounts of money. Now, it used to be 10-15%. Now they're tipping 15-25%.
Yeah.
So if you go into a restaurant in China, people don't tip. I mean, maybe there's very seldom exceptions we could point out, but they generally, 99% of the time, don't tip. So if you see someone leaving the restaurant and leaving a big wad of cash on the table, they're probably Americans.
Yeah, I have had this. I think I was meeting with clients. I remember this American lady who insisted.
Welcome to The Bridge. Fun conversations on culture, life, and everything in between.
Find us where you get your podcasts. If you like the show, then consider pushing the like button or giving us 5 stars. Suggestions, comments, anything you would like to share, email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com. We love the bridge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Welcome to The Bridge. Americans tip when we're not supposed to and ask telling questions while abroad. Chinese tourists spend on luxury items abroad they might not buy when they're back home. Let's put on our travel habits side by side and see who's easier to identify. Alex, when you go abroad, can you tell someone is like, oh, wow, that person's American right away?
Well, first off, let me say just one thing. I would look forward to the day when I can go abroad and buy luxury items. I'm not going to buy back at home. Well, that's okay. And about Americans, and no offense, I'm just saying, and this is not my saying, this is my other dear friend who's from New Zealand, who's sent me this meme, and it's a little clip from Adventure Times, and it's that character hearing some noise outside and pulling the cover over his head and says, oh my God, they're so loud. And then he sends that to me and says, me every time I meet an American person.
Wow.
It's a joke, but
you know, that's really interesting because I've heard both. I've heard Chinese people complain that Americans are too loud, and I've heard American people complain that Chinese people are.
Exactly.
I think it's just something people like to complain about when other people are loud. They blame just weird things like their ethnicity or something.
Exactly. And then I guess they're just excited people in every culture, because I've heard, for example, like European people that are really, really loud in China. And then when I was abroad, usually the Korean groups, they're always gathered, like having a get together, having a couple of soju, and they're very excited as well. So it exists in every culture. I guess it's not specific to any group.
Well, you know, I would assume that someone from the US or the UK would be the like most likely to get in a bar fight. That's kind of my assumption. But I was wrong, because while living here in Beijing, I never saw any of my American or UK friends, even though I thought these people are very likely to. But I actually saw a German guy who's one of the most polite gentlemen I ever met actually into bar fights. So you never know. People are defy their nationality.
a lot. But I think when you're traveling abroad, the one thing that people like to use the most to identify where you're from is the way you dress. I don't know if you watched Modern Family, that episode when Mitchell goes to Paris and he's trying to ask for directions. In the beginning, he thinks that people are not willing to tell him because the way he speaks. So he starts to saying bonjour, and then people are still speaking English right back at him. And he's just like,
yeah, I saw the clip.
Right? He's like, well, how do you know I'm American? They're like, look, the way you dress.
Yeah, it's like the way you dress.
Yeah, the way you dress.
So he goes and he gets all new clothes. And the next time he says bonjour, someone says bonjour back and he smiles.
Yeah, and he just pretends to speak French the whole time, and people didn't even question that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't been to Europe. So do Americans dress very differently from Europeans?
I guess the way that, you know, I want to say we're not trying to cast stereotypes, but a lot of times, like, they're not very paying like a great amount of attention to how they match their clothes or what's the style I'm wearing today. And they're more going for comfort and stuff. There is one thing that a lot of Chinese people back then, maybe 10 years ago, they would say, that's one thing that culturally identifies American people from other group. I remember this one friend says to me, he says, if you go to America, you'll see that like most people don't use the most updated iPhones. They're not using the fanciest smartphones. They're using the one that just works, that just has the function that helps them with what they need, and that's it.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because Tim Cook was just here in Shanghai, and he did make an announcement, and this is a little off topic, but I think it's exciting for nerds, but apparently the Vision Pro is coming to China this year.
Oh, God. My boyfriend won't shut up about it. That's
what is it going to cost? Like 25,000 RMB or something? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, like 26,000. Exactly. I was like, I have that money. I'll use it for like traveling to
Europe. I'll go to Italy myself in person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyways. Okay. So, I mean, I think they're obviously telling things about Americans. One thing I notice, and I saw this online recently, is Eastern Europeans are easy to identify because they seem to love Adidas. So if you see someone head to toe in Adidas, there might be from Eastern Europe.
No, we claim Adidas because my mom's go-to brand when she wants to buy me like comfortable clothes and shoes.
Yeah, but head to toe with stripes down your legs and like it's a big hat. This is Adidas on it.
She wants to, but I'm saying no. But she would be happy if that's me.
Huh. You know, a lot of Americans, you have variety. And this is my opinion as an American. You have people with crazy wild things on their shirt, cartoon characters and big words and Gucci design. And then
ACDC.
Right, and then your shirt. The people that are like, I don't wear logos.
Yeah. Right?
And so they're like completely just black t-shirts or black shirts or white shirts or whatever. And so you have like a genuine range of people. So I do, but I still do think you can tell people how they are by their when they're abroad, because Americans do tip and they tip exorbitant amounts of money. Now, it used to be 10-15%. Now they're tipping 15-25%.
Yeah.
So if you go into a restaurant in China, people don't tip. I mean, maybe there's very seldom exceptions we could point out, but they generally 99% of the time don't tip. So if you see someone leaving the restaurant and leaving a big wad of cash on the table, they're probably Americans.
Yeah, I have had this. I think I was meeting with clients. I remember this American lady who insisted on tipping the waiters. And I'm like, we don't tip in China and they don't really accept cash. They don't accept things outside of your bill because they get their salary that's more than enough to support their livelihood.
Right.
They're not going to get less money just because there's fewer customers or they were not as happy with their service. They get their base salary and all of that. And that's enough. And but she insists on leaving tips and I have to talk to the manager. I have to like, you know, I'm like, oh God, I know you want to say that you're grateful that you had a great time dining in their facility, but it's just not part of the culture. And, you know, like after living in the United States for like a couple of, because I lived there for 6 years and you're used to tipping and stuff, you start to have this idea that every other foreign country requires tipping. And so when I started traveling, I'm just like, do I tip? Do I not tip? And then I remember asking that question in every other country. And people are just like, no. Like, if you really want to, yeah, sure. But nobody expects you to tip. I'm like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, I had to go through that phase, too. And it took me a good 6 months to get over tipping because
You felt like you were doing something wrong.
Yeah, well, I'm supposed to tip. I don't know. It was a cultural thing that had been beaten into me my whole life. And then I had a friend from New Zealand sit me down. And he said, Jason, in New Zealand, we also don't tip. In Australia, we also don't tip. And when you come to China and you start tipping like this, the people aren't grateful. Firstly, they're confused. And secondly, it might even make people think like question their reality. Like, hey, wait, am I not getting paid enough or should I be paid more? Or like, what is there some sociocultural thing that I'm, you know, and it might actually hurt people in society. And after he had this conversation with me, I stopped tipping. Yeah. I mean, I tip occasionally. Now, and we've talked about this before. If a delivery person coming to my home had an unusually difficult time getting to my home because of whatever, maybe it's even my fault, right? Maybe I put the instructions in wrong. Then I will tip 5 or 10, 15 RMB because I feel like I wasted their time or something and they deserve to be compensated for the failing that went on during that period of time. But normally, you know, 99% of the time, the deliveries just come on time and where they're supposed to. So there's no problem.
Yeah. And then they give you the option in the app where you can add a little bit of gratitude. That's very small, like 15, 20 quid is very generous, Jason.
Yeah.
That's great. That's, you know, you're an awesome human being for doing that. But for people like me, if I want to be, if I order something something that's super heavy. I live in a building that doesn't have elevators and they have to climb up the stairs, or it's a bit really bad weather, then I give them like maybe, because there are options you can pick, like 3 quai to 5 quai, which is not a lot. It doesn't make you feel like you're paying an extra bill for the person, but you also show that you're a little, here's my gratitude for you. And then if they deliver like 20, 30 bills and stuff, on a bad day, they do make a little more. But, you know, there's options for people to do that, but people just don't expect it.
Well, you know, I think the big thing people are going to want to hear on this show is, what about Chinese people? Are there culturally identifying habits that Chinese people use when they're abroad? So I just want to be briefly, because, you know, I think in America, in the United States of America, there are a lot of people who don't know, is this person Japanese? Is this person Korean? Is this person Chinese? So I want to tell a story about the 1990s. And I think this might be true today, too.
Yeah.
Most great cameras are made in Japan. They still are. This is true. So in the 1990s, Japanese tourists were very wealthy globally, and they were traveling all over the world. And one of the things that was going on in America was a stereotype that Japanese tourists walk around with cameras dangling around their necks. And so this, in a lot of movies, you see Japanese tourists walking through New York City with cameras taking pictures of everything.
Yeah.
So that was a culturally telling thing about East Asians at that time. But in terms of Chinese going abroad, I can't think of a lot of really obviously culturally identifying features, but I do statistically, and this is true, Chinese people are super savers. Back home in China, when they're in their homes and they're just going about their daily lives,
exactly,
they tend to save roughly 40% of their income, which is higher than the national average, far higher than the US average, higher than the EU average, etc. So what's interesting is Chinese people are very difficult to get to part with their cash. Except when they're traveling, when they're on a holiday. So if they're in like Paris, they're in LVMH stores buying things that even Americans would be like, I don't think I can afford this.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think I've mentioned the saying, we call it 穷家富路, meaning that I could be frugal at home, but I will spend when I'm on the road so that you can have a little extra comfort. You can have the safety. You can have the reassurance so that you're not worried about uncertainties. And again, when you're traveling, I'm already paying for service and paying for joy. So I'm going to just spend the cash, spend the money on whatever I can afford on the way. And then people do like to, this was especially true maybe a couple of years ago when people were trying to buy luxury items overseas because they do get a better deal. And also they're thinking, I'm in the fashion capital of the world. Of course, I'm going to buy some fashionable items there.
Yeah, I went to America and my wife is Chinese. She stayed here. This was, 2014 to 2015. And I was just like in the local Kmart, which is like, you know, the low bar for like buying stuff. And I was just like, oh, you know, there's some cool dresses here. I'll get my wife something.
So, you bought your wife dress in Kmart.
In Kmart. Yeah, this is it. Yeah, I know. So it was just because it was that in Oakdale.
Nothing against Kmart.
This is what is in Oakdale, know? California, where my parents live. And so I was, and that's what is there. There's a Kmart. It's a small town. So anyways, I came back to China and I was like, oh, I got you some dresses. And she's like, finally, you show me the stuff you got for me in America. And I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Because then I showed her these dresses and she's like, these are trash.
You should be like, in a way, this is very American. We just go out on a stroll and then we run into the Kmart and we decide to buy. You should flip the narrative, Jason. Instead of saying that I got your dress in Kmart, and say, I was just walking around Kmart and I thought, man, I can just grab a dress for my wife because that's how I think about, how often I think about you.
Right. Anyways, it's really fast fashion-y kind of stuff. You know, the kind of dress you wear like once or twice and then it's too weirdly wrinkled to like keep wearing.
I don't hate it though. I like being able to just do that. But, you know, speaking of Kmart, there's an H Mart in New York. I think it's in other cities as well. I'm not entirely sure, but that's a very Asian store and a lot of Chinese people go there when we're in New York because the Chinese supermarkets, you have to kind of have to travel to Flushing, which is way farther out of town. In Queens, so we go to H Mart a lot. And if you go to H Mart, I think actually you will run into more Chinese people than Korean people, but this is specifically younger Chinese people because most Chinese people that go to H Mart to shop are probably international students or young professionals that have Chinese descent.
So I have an article here This is from Yahoo.com, and it's by Hannah Lowenthal. Mm-hmm. I hope I got your name right, Miss Lowenthal. It says, no one else in the world does it. And it's about telling signs that someone is American. So I just wanted to share some of these. This is from someone from Paris, and they said, I worked as a cashier in a tourist area of Paris. I always recognized Americans immediately because they were especially friendly to me, and they always left tips. So I guess Americans are friendly. Yes or no? I don't know.
I guess American people are very good at small talks. Like, they're not afraid of speaking to foreigners.
Oh, how are you? How was your day? That kind of stuff.
Oh, God, you look so nice today. You know, stuff like that. Mm,
here's another one. And this is, I get this in China. They always order ice in their water. And so the Europeans and the Chinese both think this is weird.
Yeah, or I think they will ask for Americano for coffee.
Well, I follow this guy. He travels around Italy. He's an American. He likes to upset Italians by doing culturally...
Oh, God, I love those videos.
...inappropriate things. So, yeah, he goes into, like, pizzerias with his own bottle of ketchup in his pocket. And so then when the pizza comes out, he pulls out this big American-sized bottle of ketchup and just starts squirting ketchup all over. He literally has, sometimes they take the pizza away from him and refuse to serve him.
I love those. And then I've seen videos where he breaks the spaghetti in half and then before cooking them. Yeah. And then he also put pineapples on pizza.
Yeah. This is an interesting one to me because I didn't know this was true. He waits until after 12 o'clock and he orders a cappuccino. And there are people were like, no.
Oh, that's a thing? I didn't.
They'll literally like pour him a beer or something and give him that and just be like, cappuccino, no.
Because it's too weak for...
It's only for breakfast, apparently.
Oh, really? Here's the thing. When I was in the UK or when I'm hanging out with my other European friends, mostly German friends, they, after dinner, they all like to drink like a shot of espresso. And I kind of just leave that behind after... You know, that was because I went to the UK when I was 21. And then I forget about it and I go to the United States and nobody drinks coffee after like 4 or 5, right? Because it's too late and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I come back to China and I start hanging out with other European friends. And then we would go out for dinner and they'd be like, oh, do you want a coffee after dinner? They're like, do you want dessert or do you want coffee? I'm like, coffee. Oh, yeah, sure. European people, I guess they do drink coffee after dinner.
Okay, so here's another one. And I got this from a movie, actually. This is from the article, but it's also in a movie. It says, quote, they drive from one shop to the next, even if it's only a 50-meter walk. And, you know, this reminds me of Americans a lot because there'll be like a parking lot, for example, like at a Walmart or a movie theater or a grocery store or whatever. People fight so hard and so adamantly to park close to the grocery store when parking like 20 meters further away would be easy and all they would have to do is walk for 30 more seconds. This is a huge thing in America.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Just park at the back of the parking lot and then you have,
I refuse.
You don't have to fight for parking. It's like, and then walk.
Yeah, I guess that is the thing. I do feel like most more European people like to use public transportation or they bike as a way to commute. I know a lot of people like to bike for fitness nowadays, regardless where you come from, but they're more inclined to, European people are probably more inclined to use those as a way of transportation, whereas American people probably want to drive a little more. Or cab it. But this excludes New York people. New York City, it's just like, I will walk. I will take the subway. I'll take the bus everywhere.
You know, there's another one. I also watch about Japanese videos where they try to make, they make fun of foreigners, not just Americans, but all kinds of foreigners. And one thing that they say Americans do is walk while eating, which apparently in Japan is like a big no-no. It's like culturally
rude. I heard about
it. But I have it here in this article as well. It says, when I lived in Europe, people said that only Americans eat while walking. So
not true.
I guess that's so you eat while walking.
I definitely do. Me and Dalton and I, my boyfriend and I, the other day we were going to a show, whatever, but we didn't have enough time to grab real dinner, so we just grabbed the tianbing on the street and we just ate it as we walked in the hutongs, and it was very enjoyable. And then I heard my friend talk about that as well after they visited Japan, and they said you're not allowed to, I'm not sure if it's written in laws and regulations or just people's expectations that they're, you know, you're not supposed to eat while you walk. I'm like, I understand. I don't like people eating on public transportation, especially if it's an enclosed space like the subway.
Well, there's signs to this in pretty much every country.
Yeah, because it just stinks up the whole space and then people get nauseous from it. So don't do that. But if I'm walking, I feel like, why am I not allowed to eat? Because so we definitely like to do that. And if you go to some other parts of China, eating outside, maybe not walking, but eating outside, it's part of their culture.
Oh, yeah. best military commander is not he who fights 100 battles and wins every one of them. The best military strategy does not lead to the desiccation of the enemy's capital city. Decoding the Art of War will help you understand why there's no art in war and how Sun Tzu stayed undefeatable using the science of war, with fun stories and insightful breakdown of famous battles. Tune in to Decoding the Art of War on Spotify.
You're listening to The Bridge.
Here's another one. This is Americans are amazed by things that are more than 200 years old, presumably because they don't have many things that old in the U.S.
This is very true. I feel like I'm using my boyfriend as a target today. We were driving by the Forbidden City one day, and he looks at the architecture, and he turns around and he just goes, "Wow, this place is older than my country." Like, I said, that is true, huh? Once you put things in that perspective, it is kind of odd.
Yeah, you know, I feel that way. I thought everyone felt that way. I was in a temple in Wudangshan, which is in Hubei. Or I guess it's on the border with Chongqing and Hubei. I'm not sure where it is. Anyways, I was there.
But you were there.
You know, most of the temples here in Beijing, they've been rebuilt several times. So they're at, even though they're technically from like 1600 or 800 or whatever, they've been rebuilt since then a couple of times. But this particular temple, the Purple Cloud Temple at Wudangshan, was actually 2000 years old.
Wow.
And they had these huge barrels of water everywhere with these buckets next to them. And it was like, if there's a fire, please help signs all over the place.
Oh my God.
Because, you know, it's the original wood from forever ago. And so I was like, just jaw dropped, shocked. And Summer, my wife, she was like, "Yeah, it's old."
She's like, "What else? Like, everywhere."
Yeah, this is just normal, Jason. What's up with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess outside of the U.S., I mean, everywhere else in the world, island, Africa, Europe, Asia, you guys have stuff that's been around forever. Whereas in North America, most standing structures have only been there for a couple hundred years.
Yeah, that is true.
So another thing, and you just mentioned this, it says, from what I've been told by European friends and travelers, it's a complete and utter lack of an indoor voice that instantly reveals Americans. So I guess the Europeans agree with you. It's the Americans who are noisy.
They just get very excited, I think.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Mm. Hey, American listeners, I guess we need to work on our indoor voices.
Well, if you disagree, let us know as well, I guess, because this is all about the fun little stories that we can discuss. I do feel like when I was in the States, when I was eating in restaurants, the overall noise is not that high. Like, people don't scream. They don't have really loud conversations. But for some reasons, I feel like once they travel abroad, the table just flips.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe Americans abroad are a self-selecting group and they're actually different.
Maybe.
My mom doesn't remind me of anyone that I've met abroad. She's like this sweet old lady and she's like always kind and gentle and like drinking tea and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody like that who is an American in China. We're all rambunctious.
Because it is true. If you think about it, when I was in the States in actual restaurants, I've never ever felt like, oh my God, that table is so loud. But but when I was here, it happens to people from all places. We were at a Japanese restaurant the other day and this Chinese, two friends are sitting next to us. It was so obnoxiously loud. We had to change tables because it was just too bothering for me. So I don't know, Jason, what makes
you... I think you pointed out something here. I have to point this out now that I've seen it. Because when I was in America living in San Francisco, I was like at home drawing, painting, just doing whatever, maybe casually hanging out with my friends occasionally, right? Then I moved to South Korea before I moved to China. And the first thing I was like is, where's the parties at, right? Like, but that was not who I was back home. Maybe there is something about moving abroad.
You're like
reset into some weird person.
Yeah, and I guess you get to meet people in a foreign setting and you just get, there's just more excitement to that. Be like, oh my God, I'm here. How do you like it? And there's just a natural connection that kind of makes you raise your voice a little bit because you're really happy that you're bonding with somebody outside of your own comfort zone.
Wow. Before we get in, I have another article about Chinese tourists, but before we get into it, could you just make one guess about what kind of things might help people identify someone as Chinese while abroad?
I'll give you this something that's very, very specific because there's so many different groups nowadays and really people from all different backgrounds would go abroad and it's hard to just give them one identifying tag. But if you go to, for example, any grocery store where there's fresh produce especially if there are any melons. If you see an Asian looking person picking up a melon like fruit, and then they try to flick on the fruit, and then they listen to the sound of the flicking or the tapping, that person by like 100% is Chinese. I don't even know why I'm like, I sort of know why I'm doing it, but I don't know. I can't really describe what I'm doing. I can't really tell you what sound will be the reassuring factor. This is going to be a sweet melon, but I do it to every melon that I pick up.
I'm sort of perplexed.
But have you done it? Have you seen your wife do it? Every Chinese person does it when we pick up like fruit that's a melon, any type of melon.
Well, when my wife and I go to the grocery store, we usually separate and then rejoin close to the cashier, right? So like we both would like
grab things.
Whatever you want and whatever I want is not going to be the same. You go that way, I go this way.
Yeah.
But you know, I've never thumped a fruit and listened to it.
Try to go with her to the produce section and see if she does it. Because every Chinese person will do it to a melon.
I just look at it, you know? Is it like, you know, consistently the same color, a healthy color? And then like, okay, and does it have any weird slime on it? No? Great, this is edible.
Yeah, melons are different to Chinese people. We just got to do it to the melon.
Maybe you guys are having like a conversation, an ongoing conversation since ancient times.
That the world will never learn about.
Okay, so I have this article and it is specifically about luxury items. So it's from ChineseTouristAgency.com, how Chinese travelers are changing luxury. And the first three things here are all about luxury spending. One specifically has data, which I like, and it says, quote, a majority of affluent Chinese consumers, around 70%, prefer to spend on luxury items overseas due to their affinity for outbound travel. I disagree with this. Mm-hmm. I think that this sounds accurate, but I think Chinese tourists from Beijing, if they were to go to another city in China, would also be spending a lot there as well. I think it's when they leave home, they like to spend on stuff. Yeah.
It really just depends on the type of traveler that they are. You know, a lot of, like we said, I think we discussed this before, a lot of people in their middle ages or people that are from my parents' generation, they didn't really have a lot of traveling opportunities when they were young. So now when they're like mid or late 50s, or they're either retired or just at a place where they're financially comfortable, of course they're going to want to go travel and buy things, because, you know, the roots, the foundation of consumerism is the joy that it brings to people.
You know, my wife is actually kind of like this, but it has to be spectacular for her. So if we're traveling from Beijing to another city like Qingdao, she'd be like, okay, let's stay in a 4-star hotel or a 3-star hotel to save money.
Yeah.
But if I say, okay, well, let's go to Senya, she's like, resort time. And it's like, it's got to be like
exactly
the poshest thing around, right? With helicopters and stuff.
Yeah, it has to be.
So I think when she thinks like this is a high level vacation, then her expectations change.
Yeah. And then if you know that, like, I think Chinese people are very specific with the places they pick to go, whether they're going for the beach or whether they're going for the shopping experience or whether they're going for, you know, relaxed time. It's a very set pattern of travels that they like to do. Like Sanya, for example, is specifically for resorts and beach time, and Europe, especially France and Italy, for shopping. And then there's other places within China specifically, like the mountains and temples and stuff. You're just going there to see the view. So they will put up with the very crowded, you know, the very dense group. They will put up with it because they want to see the view and they will see it.
Yeah, I have to say, I was never a fan of tour groups until I came to China. But it's actually a really great, really fantastic discounts. And sometimes you actually do stay in a really nice hotel, by the way.
Yeah, and you just pay a little bit more and you do get nicer service, and then you don't feel like you're just looking at the same mountain everywhere you go. They tell you all the stories behind different mountains and different whatever scenic spots that you're visiting. And it actually adds a lot and makes you feel like you're a very learned traveler, and you can just brag about it when you come home to your friends.
So in the same article, it also mentions that food is a very crucial part of the travel experience for Chinese tourists. You know, it's really funny for Americans. I mean, even rich Americans, is one of the first things many Americans do when they get to a new country is go to McDonald's. And it's not because, oh my gosh, Americans don't like foreign food. It's more like, I want to know what like McDonald's is in this country.
I do that too. I go to the McDonald's wherever I go, wherever I go, just to try. And I also do it the other way around. If my foreign friends come to China, especially if they're Americans, I definitely take them to McDonald's just to prove them that McDonald's in China is better than McDonald's in the U.S. U.S.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you know, you guys do have that two sausages on the hamburger thing that's not back in America. But, you know, I also find when I see an American brand that's rare in China, I have to go there, even if I'm not a huge fan. Like, Carl's Jr.'s is a fast food chain in the United States. It's good. But, like, it's not like if I was in America, I would see it and go, oh, it's Carl's Jr.'s and pull in.
You wouldn't seek it out, yeah.
But I was in the Shanghai, one of the airports in Shanghai recently, in the last couple months, and I was like, oh my gosh, a Carl's Jr.'s? I've never seen one in China before. Gotta go.
Yeah.
So I went there and had a burger, and I was like, you know, it was a Carl's Jr. burger. But like, it wasn't because I am a huge fan of Carl's Jr.'s. It was because the specialness of having it abroad.
Yeah.
And it's being kind of rare was really, you know.
Like Taco Bell.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's different. Taco Bell's the best restaurant ever made by human beings. And like, it needs to be frequented wherever you go. They should just build them every. In fact, let's just close all other restaurants.
And just build Taco Bells instead.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
so goodness me. So, well, you know, for people, I don't know about Chinese people. A lot of my Chinese friends always just say nice things to me no matter what. But I do know a lot of other Europeans who live here in China who think Americans are. And I've even had an Italian friend. I'm not going to say his name. He lives in Shanghai. He said Americans are, quote, barbarians.
Oh, no.
What he means by this is that we will do things that are not the way that things are traditionally done. Like, we'll break conventions. For example, I had this, and this, you may even think this is gross, right?
Oh, let's hear it.
It was New Year's Eve 2015 or 16. I don't remember. And we had run out of like the primary vehicle for intoxication. So we had this very old aged whiskey, and it was like 25-year-old aged whiskey, very high quality, that was like in a case, and you're not supposed to drink it. It's supposed to be just for looking almost. So we opened it up.
Oh, no.
And we started mixing it with like salt and lime and lemons and stuff. And like a lot of the people who were more refined there, people from like England and Italy, who were a little bit older than us, were like, you can't do this.
Yeah.
That should be drank purely by itself. You can't just start mixing that with lemon.
Oh my like, God.
You've ruined this whiskey.
I guess you could do that, but that's just from, I think that's some kind of college culture that got built into everyone's DNA. And you're just like, I can live like this for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, also, you know, and this is interesting. I'm not sure how Europeans are as much on this. I know British people and American people, we love to drink for the purpose of getting drunk. You know, this is a true thing. A lot of, they're like drinking. I don't know a lot of Chinese people like that. Most of the Chinese people are like just pacing themselves slowly just to have like a beer or two. Am I wrong?
I guess you haven't been out in this part of town. Maybe it's because on the west side, people are just more family oriented and they don't drink. Like over here on my side of town, Jason and I, we both live in Beijing. We live in different parts of the city. Over here on the east side, oh my God, you see people that are so drunk. We were at QMEX the other day, one of the foreign restaurants here. It's a kind of a Tex-Mex place. They are for the quiz, which started at 8:30. So it wasn't that late, but the table next to us, they had this lady that were completely just blackout drunk, but she was like angry when she's drunk, when she got drunk. It was such a embarrassment, I would say, because her friends couldn't handle her, and she couldn't, like, throwing up, and she was on the floor. She was conscious throughout this whole time, and then she...
Oh, my.
Yeah, so she refused to...
I feel sorry for her liver.
Yeah, so she refused to leave, and she was mad at something we couldn't really hear. We didn't want to be, like, nosy in other people's business, but they were making a lot of noise. And what happened in the end was that her parents had to come and pick her up, and then her dad got really mad at her friends for getting her that drunk, and her dad almost got a little physical with the...
Wow.
Yeah, there was almost like a little altercation with her friends. But it happens a lot to people. Like, you walk around at 7:30 and someone just like their friends are carrying them, the person, and the person's still kind of having, you know, slurring their speech, trying to say something. But people actually do get really, really, really.
Well, let's compare that really quickly.
Yeah.
Because in Korea, I noticed, and this is a real thing, I would find businessmen passed out on the ground in the morning.
Oh, my God.
So you're walking to work at 7 a.m., 8 a.m., right, to go to work, and there'd be like a guy in a nice suit with, you know, maybe he didn't keep everything down well.
Ew.
And he's laying on the side of the ground, just like wrapped around a pole or something.
Yeah.
I think in, you know, Japanese and Korean culture, this is more of a thing where business associates go out and they get so thrashed that they cannot comport themselves home.
Yeah.
But I've never seen that in China. I've never seen a Chinese guy just pass out on the sidewalk in the morning.
That's the thing. Like, we people do get really, you know, intoxicated, and, you know, to a point where they can't walk. But most of the time, I think you'll have someone that's going to take you home. Like, you're not going to be left alone and then pass out on the street. That's why when I was, I think it was back in 2012, I was talking to a few American students and young professionals that have moved to China. They all have a story of just themselves being by themselves, one person, after drinking and just passing out on the street, waking up the next morning. And I'm like, how do you all have confidence in whatever it is? Like, I will never allow myself to be in that situation, because I don't think if I pass on the street, I would wake up like in one piece. How do you have that kind of, how do you feel? I guess in another way, it speaks to the fact that it's really safe in China, but they all have different stories of them just like passing out in the middle of the street and waking up and covered in dirt, and their wallet's still there, their phone's still there, and they're able to just hail a cab and come home and covered in dirt. I'm like, how does this happen to every single person?
Oh, wow. I feel so sorry for so many people's organs. Okay.
I know.
Let's move on. So we mentioned this before, and a lot of people know this. In many European countries, they still have a tradition of Sunday closing shop, which is weird, especially in a smaller town. So you're like, in some smaller town, you can't find a grocery store that's open on Sunday. But in China and the United States, this is not the case.
Which is great.
Like, you could get the same things, like, pretty much almost 24 hours a day, like in any major city. It's just open, except maybe 4 or 5 days during Chinese New Year, where some stuff does close.
You'll have, like, even during Chinese New Year, you'll definitely find things that are open. Like, if you have things that you need to buy, all of your, like, life necessities and stuff are definitely accessible. Mm. It's not going to be like a whole town is going to shut down. But on that matter, when I was in the United States, every time when I was spending Christmas alone, the only places that are open are Chinese restaurants. So just go have.
Yes and no. You know, here's the thing about that. In America, in the United States of America, I remember in the 80s and 90s, Christmas was like very like sacred, and almost nothing was open. Maybe some Chinese restaurants, right? But almost nothing was open. But that quickly changed. And by the turn of the millennium, you know, if you're in 2005 and later, like major fast food restaurants are open all of a sudden. You'd be Because they were realizing, hey, if we're the only thing open, we're going to get more traffic. And so all these people who own those franchises started paying employees to stay to work on Christmas and paying them overtime because they wanted that extra revenue. And so by today, Christmas in America, everything's open.
Oh, really? I mean, when I was there, it was still very, very, at least when I was in Boston, I remember Christmas 2013, I made the joke. I walked on the street and took a picture of myself on an empty street, completely empty, quiet, dead, like no one was on the street. And I said, hey, I make Boston disappear.
I guess that's another thing about Europe and the United States. In the United States, Christmas is this gigantic spend-a-thon where it's not just gifts, but it's decorations and stuff. And in Europe, it's much more mild. In fact, there are a lot of people who are against the hyper-consumerism of Christmas in Europe. And so it's not like buildings are adorned with so many lights that it's blinding.
Yeah. Oh, that is one thing that I do love for festivals here in China and in the United States. I've never celebrated any festivals in other countries, but the light, I know it wastes a lot of energy, but it just makes you feel so festive and brings you so much joy. Oh, yeah.
The best military commander is not he who fights 100 battles and wins every one of them. The best military strategy does not lead to the desiccation of the enemy's capital city. Decoding the Art of War will help you understand why there's no art in war and how Sun Tzu stayed undefeatable using the science of war, with fun stories and insightful breakdown of famous battles. Tune in to Decoding the Art of War on Spotify.
Listening to The Bridge.
You You know, I was just thinking, going back to tourists abroad, what's identifying about them? And I want to contradict this afterwards with another story. But we were mentioning Chinese like to travel in groups. And that is true. I have a friend who is from Ireland. He was in Jeju Island, which is in South Korea. And he said he could always find, identify the Chinese tourists because there would be a large group of mostly older women who all had selfie sticks and traveled in a big pack of about 20 people.
And they all have scarves. And when you ask them to take a photo, they will take the scarf off their neck and then raise it above their head as a way. Okay, that is very telling. Like if my mom used to do that and then she still does, there are a couple of very identifying gestures that, you know, older Chinese ladies like to do. And I've started to find those very adorable. Like they love to take pictures with the flowers. And then when they do take pictures with the flowers, they like to put their hands below the flowers as if they were holding the flowers up. And then they put their nose next to it as if they were smelling. I think those are very adorable. Very, very cute.
You know, you remind me that I was in a park by my house last week, which is the first week that some of the flowers started to bloom here in Beijing. And there were two trees in the park that had buds on them. And they were surrounded by elderly people, you know, men and women with these gigantic cameras that cost more than I make in a month. And they were all just like taking these just insane pictures of the flowers. So yeah, Chinese people love flowers and big cameras, you know, especially retired Chinese people all seem to immediately buy a camera with the largest lens possible.
It's a way of workout. It's a workout, Jason. You just don't know. That's their arm day.
You know, there are competitions here in Beijing for most beautiful nature pictures taken in that park.
Yeah.
So a few of the parks, they have these displays where they show the most beautiful pictures taken by photographers in the last year. And so I think one of the things that retirees here do in China is they get these inordinately expensive cameras and go around taking pictures all day, every day, and submitting them to these competitions in the hopes that their picture will be on this big board the next year.
Why not? You can get that recognition after you retire. My aunt, this is not completely related, but my aunt has been traveling to different cities doing little sketch shows, you know, comedy shows, and with her husband. And she publishes little poems on different little magazines as well. She brags about it all day and she's enjoying it. And we love that she's enjoying it.
No, another thing that's, I think, identifying for everyone, not just nationality you are, but like as a tourist, is that you do go to touristy locations. For example, the Great Wall of China. I moved to China, but I didn't see it for like 7 years. But every single person I know who came from America who was going to be in Beijing for a few days or a week went to the Great Wall of China because they were like, that's the thing you're supposed to go see. And so I think if you go to like the Arc de Triomphe, right, you're going to immediately be surrounded by non-Parisian people.
Pretty much.
So, yeah, you know, so actually that's one of the things I like to do is not go to those places. I like to go onto the website. Okay, so I'm traveling to Nanjing, hypothetically, right? I will go look up 25 cool things or 10 top cool things to go to do in Nanjing. And whatever the most touristy thing is, I'd immediately knock that off the list.
Yeah.
And then I do like three or four of the other things that I personally would find interesting. For example, I had a vacation. Mm. Oh, I had a week off recently and I didn't travel. I was here in Beijing because I was like, I need a break from vacation.
Yeah.
So people asked me afterwards, what did you do? One of the things I said, oh, I went to this museum. And they said, of course you went to a museum. You go to...
Of course Jason went to the museum.
Yeah. Jason is such a nerd, he would go to museums. But that's one of the things I like to do when I'm traveling also is go to all the museums in that city that it matters.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't think a lot of tourists go to museums unless it's the Louvre. Like, most museums, or like the National Museum of China, like, most museums in the world don't matter to most people, I don't think.
I feel like it's something that has definitely changed. At least for as young travelers, they start to make their ways about this world and they have a very different goal. They're not, you know, they're not like their parents' generation. And I'm speaking to probably just the younger Chinese groups. They've been having opportunities to visit other countries or different cultures. So they want to see things that interest them, like, you know, what you just said. If they'd like skiing, then they will go to different skiing resorts in the world to have that experience. For me, I dance salsa. I go to whatever salsa festival, you know, and see the country via the lens of through the lens of dance. And then I have other friends who are huge wine and whiskey fanatics, and they go to different places to try their wine, and then they visit the wine tasting masters and stuff. So it's definitely diversifying to a much larger scale and they have different travel preferences nowadays.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
In some bit of context here. Mm. I was watching this Korean lady who travels abroad and she was in England and she was like, I've been in England for 3 weeks. I was trying not to eat Korean food until today, but I couldn't hold out anymore. So I went to this Korean restaurant and it was awful because it's not really like Korean food at all. And she had pictures of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, we were talking about McDonald's earlier for Americans.
Yeah.
When you go abroad as a Chinese person, do you look for Chinese restaurants and then compare them to food back home?
I would never compare them to the food back home. I had my expectations adjusted long time ago.
Sure.
Do not expect that to be as good as home. Like, it just, it's comfort. Like, it just, if you haven't had food from home for a while, then you go to that to have some kind of comfort, you know, just to make you less homesick. This is very famous chain restaurant called, I think, can't remember the English name. It's called Xi'an something. So it's a chain restaurant that sells these white noodles, the oil spilled noodles, and, you know, from the northwest part of China. They got really big in for a certain time period, and they were a franchise as well, different locations. Back then, I felt those were amazing noodles. If you ask me to eat it nowadays, when I could just go downstairs and turn a street corner and have a very authentic northwestern oil spilled noodle, I would not eat that stuff. But it's not, it makes you less homesick. I don't compare.
You know, I was thinking about the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You've seen all those pictures of all the people standing there with the, like,
yeah, and trying to push it.
I love the pictures where people take those people out of context and take pictures of them at different angles where you can't see the Leaning Tower of Pisa. And
oh, that's cute.
Just show how weird people's like impression.
Oh, or people who put the Eiffel Towers on their palm. You know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I've done those pictures. They're fun, I guess.
Why not?
Yeah,
not. Why not?
What can you do with the Great Wall? You
know? Oh, yeah. I don't know. You can't really do. You're in it. You have to be in it when you take pictures.
Culturally identifying features of Chinese abroad. I'm trying to think about this and I can't really because, you know, I don't think that there are a lot of really obvious tells for Chinese people when they travel abroad that are like.
I felt like it's so different.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, spending a lot of money when they wouldn't spend at home and spending a lot on luxury items, luxury hotels, luxury food, that kind of thing. But I mean, anyone could do that potentially. It depends on what class they're
exactly.
from. So it's not really easy to just be like, oh, that person's a Chinese person versus someone else. So I don't think it's that, but I think
exactly.
It's weird because as an American, I feel like I'm so obvious. Even when I first came to China, I was like, you know, Americans, are we cool? Or should I pretend to be Canadian? Will people know? Maybe I should get a little Canadian flag and wave it so people don't like think I'm weird. But as soon as I got here, I noticed that people would be like, oh, you're from America. Oh, my American friend. And I was like, okay, it's okay. It's all right then.
Yeah, I hope no one feels that way when they're traveling abroad. It's a little sad.
Well, I mean, obviously there are places where you wouldn't want to be identified as one country in a particular other country. I don't think that Americans have that problem in China, though. In fact,
no, not at all.
There's a debate going on right now, and I think this is an important discussion point, is that right now, if you're from almost any country in Europe, you can come to China visa free.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this, but it's opening up more and more all the time. Literally from 1 week to another, it's like opening up and opening up and opening up.
Yeah.
And basically, if you're from any European country right now, the only difference between you being in Europe right now versus you being in China is one plane ticket. You don't need anything. You could just get on a plane and show up in Beijing or Shanghai and just be here. Like, so. But yeah. Americans cannot do that. So there's a raging debate online between China experts and, you know, Chinese diplomats and like, should we do this for Americans too? So before I give my answer, what do you think, Alex?
I think just make I understand the concerns and stuff. Just make the visa process easier.
Well, they did that.
They did. I think I just read this yesterday on the news and I've yet to confirm it, but it seems like the other way around, for Chinese people who want to get a travel visa to the US, they don't need to go in for an interview anymore.
Really?
Yeah. But it's still...
Really?
I think I read this yesterday from a travel agency. I haven't confirmed it, but if it is proved to be true, then it'll be a huge, huge boost when it comes to the travel.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And I think they should do the same for... I think we should, you know, if we can do the same, that'll be great, because for my friends who came to China last year in October, they still had to go in to get a Chinese visa for... They need to get a quick interview or they need to drop it off in person. person and pick it up later on. But if they could just at least cancel the going in person step, that would already be amazing enough.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to see more people-to-people exchanges, and it would make it so much easier for my wife to go meet my mom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, she had to do the in-person interview thing, and I'm not going to say why it didn't work out, but it didn't work out.
Oh, no.
So that was such a frustrating experience that we were just like, screw it. You don't need to go to America. We'll just go to Japan. So we went to Japan and like Malaysia and all these other countries instead.
Yeah.
And spent a ton of money in those countries instead of the United States. So like, you missed out, US, because yeah, my wife does spend a lot when she's abroad. Anyways, yeah. So I think here's some of the concerns are like, we want reciprocity, right? So you mentioned you understand the concerns. So this is China's like, well, we want to give Americans the ability to travel to China, but wouldn't it be nice if we did it together? And you guys also made it easier for like Chinese to go to America. And so China has been for a long time holding on to this philosophy. But lately, in this year especially, since December last year, China has been like, let's just let everyone come when they want, you know, let's just let everyone come. And so they've been increasingly widening the net for people who could just come to China without a visa. And now it's come to, well, what about Americans? And the debate is raging. And if it could, I think the benefits outweigh the risks. Yes, America is not being fair about who can visit America, but wouldn't it be, I think it would be advantageous for China to just let as many Americans come to China as possible so that they know what they're seeing on TV about China is just wrong. Then they could all go back home and say, you lied to me.
It's not true. Exactly.
Yeah.
Why did you lie to me? Huh? That's the question.
Well, a lot of Americans are considered, you know, it's really interesting that in this article that we started out with, that Americans are considered to be super kind, is you would actually, a lot of Americans, I think, are concerned that we are come off as not rude. That's not the word. Uncultured.
Straightforward.
Oh, straightforward. Oh, go ahead. You tell me your impression. That's more interesting to me.
No, I definitely think like people are a lot more straightforward, and not in a way that they, because we don't, for example, Chinese people we don't make small talks. We're very bad at just like running into you on the street and just strike up a conversation that basically means nothing and then just walk away from it. It's very awkward for a lot of Chinese people. But for a lot of Americans, they're good at it. And then that's part of just interaction, human to human interaction that they're used to. But if they do have, for example, a problem, if they do think something is wrong, then they'll tell you. But for us, we'll think about whether it's my business or, you know, maybe it'll make you feel a certain way. And I would just keep that thought to myself. American people are kind of the opposite. Am I right? Am I wrong?
Well, I think you're right. It also makes me think about other stereotypes that Americans have. So we have a stereotype in the United States, maybe not as much anymore, but we used to, about British people love to talk about the weather. So you're right. Americans like to say, how are you? How was your day, sweetie? Right?
This What's stuff. Up? What's new?
But British people in our minds like to say, wow, it's really foggy today, but yesterday it was sunny. How do you think the weather will be tomorrow? And that's almost confusing to us because it seems like unimportant. But like, I also run into Chinese people who are like, why are you asking me how I am?
Like, the hardest question for a lot of Chinese students, especially, you know, younger Chinese people that first go to the United States, the hardest question to answer is what's new? Because we'll actually try to think of what's new to say. And then it's like the same thing, like, well, why are you asking me this? I don't know what's new. I don't constantly think about what I did. And then people ask me like, oh, what did you do this weekend? Did you do anything? I was like, I can't remember what I did this weekend. I have to like sit here and think about what I did.
But if you put it, we could categorize this into three categories. In the UK, they like to talk about the weather. Uh-huh. In America, they like to talk about your feelings. Uh-huh. And in China, they like to ask you, what did you eat?
Well, that is one thing that also...
And that's weird to us.
Yeah, but that is okay. That is one thing that people don't really ask anymore. It's from like such a long time ago.
I hear older people saying, Churlamanina. Yeah,
very old people that live in Beijing, like very specifically, they love to say that. But like my family and my friends, we never greet each other with, have you eaten? Like, did you eat? And then actually, if you do hang out around Chinese, like you know, Chinese people who are not really attuned to Western culture, they actually don't know what to say to each other when they first meet. Like if they're just, you know, like if I introduce my mom to my friends, my mom just stands there and smiles. Like she's not going to say anything. Doesn't mean that she doesn't like you. She just doesn't know what to say to you.
You know, I was thinking about one more thing that I could identify. Americans are trained in service jobs from a young age. Most anyone who goes on to do anything has worked in a service job. And so everyone is like, when they come to meet you at the restaurant, they always a huge fake smile. And they say like, oh, how are you today, sweetie? What would you like? Blah, blah, blah. But in China, China, and this is true, and I saw this in Korea and in Japan and in Canada, servers walk up with an almost indifferent look, not rude, but an indifferent look. And they'll just be like, what would you like?
Yeah.
So it's complete, like in America, like, oh my gosh, what would you like today?
Yeah, they try to make it very personal. Speaking of, that reminded me when I was in Boston, I tried to make some change and I tried to find some jobs off campus. I got too timid for my visa that I didn't do it in the end. But I remember I went into a restaurant to a job to have an interview because I go there quite often. The boss talks to me. Back then he said, Alex, you had a great smile and I think you would make a great hostess. Now that you've said that people are trained to have fake smiles, I wonder what that guy really meant when he complimented me.
Would say some of those fake smiles that you get, you know, like the Olive Garden, are some very high quality fake smiles. They put their back into those
requires
fake smiles.
Skills.
Yeah, that, you're not sure if they're your cousin or if you just met them.
But anyways, they'll give you, they'll put that, they'll expose 26 teeth so that you know that they welcome you there in the restaurant.
Yeah, that's a scary thought. Okay, so, you know, where are you from, listener? And what do you think people think of you when you travel abroad? People, what do you think of other tourists? Can you identify Americans, Chinese people, or others when they come abroad by their cultural behaviors? If so, what are they? Please email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com and let us know what you think. Thank you so much for your time, listeners. Thank you so much for your time, Alex.
Thank you, Jason. And see you next time.